The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The articles in this episode are from BlackEnterprise.com, and the first one is titled, Reverend Jesse Jackson Names Dr. Frederick D. Haynes the third new president and CEO of Rainbow Push Coalition. The incomparable Reverend Jesse Jackson has named societal justice pastor Dr. Frederick D. Haynes III the new successor of Rainbow Push Coalition. On Friday, July 15th, 2023, the civil rights leader and protege of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. officially announced his retirement. Jackson established Operation Push in 1971 as a way to promote and amplify employment opportunities for Black communities across the United States. He later launched the National Rainbow Coalition in 1984 with the goal of protecting, defending, and gaining equal rights for all Americans, according to the Rainbow Push Coalition. It eventually merged with Push in 1996. Reverend Jesse Jackson has made the world a better place, breaking down barriers, opening previously locked doors of opportunity, fighting for justice, and refusing to take no for an answer on behalf of those who have no voice, says Haynes, who also serves as senior pastor of Friendship West Baptist Church, a mega church in Dallas with more than 13,000 members, according to a press release obtained by Black Enterprise. The leadership transition took place on Sunday, July 16th, 2023, at the Rainbow Push Coalition's National Convention at the Apostolic Church of God in Woodlawn. Vice President Kamala Harris spoke at the event. Well known for the advocacy of marginalized communities, Haynes is further solidifying his national recognition as the drum major for justice. He was awarded the Presidential Lifetime Achievement Leadership Award in Community Service in 2022 and was inducted into the International Civil Rights Walk of Fame in 2016. From leading protests and demonstrations and serving as a voting supercenter to providing food and decreasing crime, Haynes is far from finished. He continues to create positive and lasting change in the community with the Friendship West Baptist Church. In addition, Haynes teaches college courses and workshops at Paul Quinn College, Texas Christian University, McCormick Theological Seminary, New Brunswick Theological Seminary, and other institutions of higher learning. The next article is titled, Small Business Association Confirms Scammers Reaped More Than $200 Billion from PPP Programs. A new report from the Small Business Administration's Office of Inspector General shows more than $200 billion disappeared from COVID relief programs. In 2020, Congress allocated $1.2 trillion to the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program and the Paycheck Protection Program to help business owners through the COVID-19 pandemic. According to the SBA report, the amount was 17% of the total amount given to the program, although the agency has already prosecuted dozens of people for fraud. It still has more than 90,000 actionable leads on others who have taken from the COVID relief programs. The report also states there are currently 570 investigations related to fraud from the two COVID programs, and more than 800 arrests related to the two programs have been made through May 2023. More than $9 billion have been recovered through fines and forfeitures. Another $8 billion in EIDL funds have been returned to the SBA by financial institutions and another $20 billion by borrowers. The New York Post reports one of the most egregious fraudsters was Donald Finley, the now closed Jekyll and Hyde restaurant owner. Finley used millions he received from the two COVID programs to purchase a home in Nantucket and is now facing up to 30 years in prison, a $1.25 million fine, and could be forced to pay more than $3.2 million in restitution. Experts added that it was easy to take money from the COVID programs because all of the information business owners needed to receive funds were self-reported. Additionally, none of the information was verified or checked to save valuable time for business owners and entrepreneurs. The fraud got so out of hand that it was hard for many to find and purchase luxury items during 2020. During the height of the pandemic, it was really hard to purchase items like a Rolls-Royce or a high-end Mercedes because you had people walking in with cash from the PPP program to purchase those items for whatever the dealer was asking. Haywood Talcove of LexisNexis Risk Solutions told the Post, "People who committed fraud to receive money used it to purchase everything, including homes, luxury watches, Lamborghinis, Land Rovers, and other luxury cars, clothing, plastic surgery, luxury trips, and even private jets." The next article is titled, "Parents Outraged as School Board Cuts Advanced Math Classes Over Racial Disparities." Parents of students from a Cambridge, Massachusetts public school are newly outraged over a 2017 decision made by the school board to end advanced math courses after finding white and Asian children were overwhelmingly being fast-tracked. According to the Daily Mail, Cambridge Public Schools, CPS, district officials noticed extreme racial disparities when assessing which students were offered advanced learning. After finding that Black and Latino children were often relegated to lower level courses, the district began phasing out the programs, resulting in Algebra 1 being removed from all middle school curricula, affecting four schools in CPS. Now, parents are arguing that the school board's decision further increases inequality, as only students who can afford private tutors have the opportunity to tackle more complex and advanced math lessons. They are shortchanging a significant number of students, overwhelmingly students from less resourced backgrounds, which is deeply inequitable, said Jacob Barandes, a district parent and a Harvard physicist. Former and current school board members seem to be split on what the original intention of the probe into possible racial disparities in advanced courses was. However, there was once a mandate to have every eighth grader in the district take Algebra 1 before entering high school, according to the Daily Mail. Algebra by eighth grade was voted upon many times over the past 30 years, said Patty Nolan, a current Cambridge City Councilor, and former school board member. And unless I am mistaken, the school committee has not rescinded its many votes that algebra for every eighth grader is a goal. Still, concerns over the divisive nature of the courses came to a head in 2019. Over time, you end up with lower level math courses filled with Black and Latino children and high level advanced math classes with white and Asian children, said Manuel Fernandez, then a principal at one of the district's public schools. Students internalize it. They believe the smart kids are the white kids. Our staff said we cannot continue to divide our students this way. Though some parents have decided the best course of action is to remove their children from CPS, there are plans to help remedy the outrage, according to the Daily Mail. CPS Superintendent Victoria Greer believes the decision will help further make up for socioeconomic factors that often leave some children behind while accelerating others forward. We have a huge focus on addressing both the academic achievement gaps and the opportunity gaps in our community, she said. One thing the district is not interested in doing is perpetuating those gaps. The next article is titled, Howard University will host inaugural HBCU First Look Film Festival in November. The inaugural HBCU First Look Film Festival, a new initiative created to showcase the next generation of Black filmmakers, will take place November 10th through 12th at Howard University. The HBCU First Look Film Festival will be one of a kind event dedicated to celebrating Black filmmakers, producers, and writers, also while serving as a pipeline for HBCU students in film and television to cultivate their talents. Attendees will experience screenings from established and emerging filmmakers, panels, and discussions featuring award-winning industry professionals, educational workshops, and networking events for students who want to be in front and behind the camera. Sheila Eldridge, the founder of the HBCU First Look Film Festival, told Black Enterprise the festival is an important step toward increasing diversity in the film industry. There needs to be more of an effort in our culture of connecting our students with alumni and really trying to build post-career opportunities for HBCU students when they graduate, and so at the end of the day, the HBCU First Look Film Festival is a way to make sure everybody has an opportunity in the industry, said Eldridge. HBCU students can submit their films on the festival's homepage through July 30th, 2023. The seven film categories are shorts, features, animated, documentary, family and faith, mobile, and health and wellness. Winners will be selected by a board of industry professionals, including producers and filmmakers. Each finalist will receive an internship opportunity, while the winners of each category will receive $5,000 and an internship opportunity. According to Eldridge, films have been submitted by students who attend North Carolina A&T, Savannah State University, Prairie View University, Norfolk State University, Rusk College, and many other HBCUs. Guests and notable HBCU alums attending the festival will be released later this year. Additionally, the Thurgood Marshall College Fund is partnering with the festival to facilitate internship placements and help create a diverse Talent Pipeline. This partnership with the First Look Film Festival offers another avenue to increase the representation of Black talent. TMCF President and CEO Dr. Harry L. Williams said in a statement, Thurgood Marshall College Fund, TMCF, intentional efforts to advance equity and inclusion align perfectly with Sheila's vision. The festival is being conducted through a partnership between Miles Ahead Entertainment, the Howard University Film Plus Television Department, and WHUR Radio. Notable HBCU alumni in the film and TV industry include Samuel L. Jackson, John David Washington, Brian Tyree Henry, Anthony Anderson, Wanda Sykes, Oprah Winfrey, and Felicia Rashad, who currently serves as the Dean of the Chadwick A. Boseman College of Fine Arts. We are building on the impact and the flavor of HBCUs and looking at how do we develop the business side, how do we develop more students on the corporate side, and the decision-making side from agents to every aspect of the industry, Eldridge added. So we are really looking to develop students and put a lens on the behind the scenes, the business side of the industry. The next article is titled, John Boyega and Tiona Paris give details about Netflix's They Cloned Tyrone. John Boyega and Tiona Paris sat down with Black Enterprise to talk about all the symbolism on display in their Jamie Foxx-assisted mystery, They Cloned Tyrone. The new sci-fi comedy follows a series of eerie events that thrust an unlikely trio, Boyega, Paris, and Fox, onto the trail of a nefarious government conspiracy. Made as a genre-busting homage to the blaxploitation films of the 1970s, Slick Charles Fox, Yo-Yo Paris, and Fontaine Boyega join forces after uncovering what appears to be a cloned version of Fontaine. The group soon takes notice of the focus an undercover organization has placed on their predominantly Black community. Directed by Jewel Taylor, the comedy mystery incorporates elements of satire, horror, and absurdist humor, and serves as a self-reflection movie, according to Boyega. So it speaks about sometimes our generalized perspective on people that we may not know. Boyega noted the blaxploitation reference throughout the film, along with the comedy that helps to lighten the mood. It was all a part of Taylor's vision for the flick that comes jam-packed with symbolic messages that Paris says were very much intentional. Dishing on what it was like to work with Fox, who wasn't present for the junket following his hospitalization earlier this year for an undisclosed medical emergency. Boyega and Paris recalled how the veteran actor would crack jokes on set that had everyone laughing. They also noted the deep debates and conversations that will come from the film's government conspiracy tie-in. I think those conversations are just going to keep on going, Boyega says. The next article is titled, Corporate Investor John Rogers Speaks on Modern-Day Jim Crow in Light of Tulsa Race Riots. Ariel Investments founder and co-CEO John W. Rogers hails from a long line of resilient lawyers who have worked tirelessly to remedy the wrongs of his family's injustice during the Tulsa race riots. The Chicago native who developed the first Black-owned mutual fund firm is proud to fight for diversity on corporate boards and better financial opportunities for Black firms. In an insightful discussion with Black Enterprise, Rogers shared the devastating story behind his great-great-grandfather's journey of losing his empire at the hands of a disapproving white community. J.B. Stratford was a leader in Tulsa's Greenwood neighborhood, having made his own empire of real estate income from 24 rental properties worth nearly $2 million. For Rogers, his late elder's journey maintains a constant reminder that there is more work to do today, now more than ever. It's a modern-day Jim Crow that Black and brown people are mostly encouraged to be engaged in the least wealth-building parts of our economy, Rogers told BE. The doors have been shut often in the most lucrative parts of our economy, the areas where the best opportunities are, that's where we are the least likely to be found in leadership roles. That's where I see the discrimination. Even in Tulsa today, the major Anchorage institutions still don't work with Black entrepreneurs and the part of the economy where the wealth is created, Rogers said. A crowned jewel lost too soon. J.B. Stratford was the son of a former Versailles, Kentucky slave named Caesar by his enslaver. He was proud to accomplish his personal goal of becoming an Indiana University-trained attorney in honor of his father's vision. From social justice and racial solidarity to real estate development, Stratford fought for change in many ways, sparking unwanted attention from much of Tulsa's white community. He publicly rallied against Oklahoma's Jim Crow laws and litigated against the railroad in Tulsa for not providing proper Black accommodations. After arriving in Tulsa via railroad in 1898 with his wife Augusta, Stratford would witness the meteoric successes and losses of being a Black man in America. Situated at 301 North Greenwood, the J.B. Stratford Hotel was America's largest Black-owned, Black-operated, and Black-guest-only hotel from 1918 to 1921. The hospitality staple would serenade Greenwood residents with joyful jazz sessions and the freedom to dance out loud without backlash. It housed 54 modern living rooms, a gambling hall, a dining hall, a saloon, and a pool hall. In 1921, an inflammatory incident report regarding a Black man and a white woman ignited the long smoldering fire that brought down the legendary Black Wall Street in Tulsa. According to Tulsa's history, Jim Crow, jealousy, white supremacy, and land lust all played roles in leading up to the destruction and loss of life and years of Black achievement on May 31st and June 1st, 1921. Stratford was profiled, detained, accused, and charged for inciting a riot. He was facing life in prison or death. With the help of his son, C.F., a Columbia School of Law graduate who resided in Chicago, Stratford fled to the Windy City and would successfully fight extradition to Tulsa. Discrimination in Chicago was no different than what was endured in Tulsa. Chicago's most famous race riot, known as the Red Summer, occurred in 1919, just 2 years before the Tulsa Massacre. The opportunities to rebuild as a Black entrepreneur who lost everything were few. The J.B. Stratford legacy was enriched by education. His mother, Jewel Stratford, was the first African-American woman to graduate from Chicago Law School. Her dad, C.F. Stratford, was a pioneering civil rights attorney and co-founder of the National Bar Association and the Cook County Bar Association. He helped argue the Hansberry v. Lee case that challenged the racially restrictive covenant that didn't allow blacks to live in certain neighborhoods in Chicago. They were destroyed because there wasn't a commitment to do business with black businesses here in Chicago and in around the nation. We lost the Ebony and Jet Building. They were these extraordinarily successful businesses. We used to have two of the five largest black banks in the country, which were here in Chicago, Independence Bank and Seaway National Bank. They are gone. The next article is titled, Ben's Chili Bowl is a cultural hub of D.C.'s Black Restaurant Week. Ben's Chili Bowl, a Chocolate City landmark in its own right, is rare business that has managed to survive the fluctuating economy and societal troubles through six decades. The restaurant is known for serving iconic chili dogs, milkshakes, and half smokes, a DC favorite usually comprised of both beef and pork, giving it its proper name. The combination of red, yellow, and white in its scenery may not wholly resemble the nation's colors, but the state of Ben's Chili Bowl has been a breeding ground and meeting place for new ideas and future cultural leaders since its establishment. What makes this black-owned business so special? It can withstand nearly anything. Maybe it's the simplicity of its menu or its world-renowned chili sauce, but one cannot deny how its location plays a pivotal role not only in its success, but its historical significance. The Afro curated a profile on the hotspot for Black Restaurant Week, commencing on July 16, 2023, giving the restaurant its flowers for remaining consistent and thus becoming a cultural phenomenon. The company has homegrown roots, founded by a newlywed couple, Ben and Virginia Ali, in 1958, the small restaurant was built in a lucky location, right in the middle of U Street, a famous neighborhood home to many black-owned businesses. Those companies have come and gone. Ben's has stood the test of time. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.